This is going to sound a little weird, but I'm not in the business to satisfy customers or to make customers or clients. I'm more in the business to create fans. And fans give you their heart. Fans don't ask for too many discounts. Fans will help you sell more cars. And in order to do that, you need to employ and develop employees that are fan makers.
Dealerships are a dime a dozen. If you can't find the deal you are looking for, or you don't like the person you are working with, the next dealer is just a few miles down the road. So, as a dealer, you must be able to differentiate yourself as much as possible, and that differentiation starts at the top.
In this episode, we hear from Center Operator Manager Marcelo Sandoval from Jaguar San Diego. He shares with us his dealership operation, with particular attention given to the relationship between automakers and dealers and how that affects the customer experience. The power struggle between both parties is quite tense, all of which customers never see. And as automakers continue to develop their methods to transact directly to customers, then dealers must evolve, adapt, and demonstrate that their dealership operation is different and better than their competitors.
And how does Marcelo do this? By searching for purple cows. Stay tuned to hear more about this. I'm Dennis Wisco.
Alongside Kelly Cruz.
And this is the Wisco Weekly Podcast in our podcast series, Dealer Exec Customer X, where dealer executives share how their dealership operation aligns with the customer experience.
You are now tuned in to the Wisco Weekly Experience.
Chicken brown cow. Listeners, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Wisco Weekly. This is our special podcast series, Dealer Exec Customer X, where I get the opportunity to hang out and wrap out with a dealer executive, and they get to share about how their dealership operation aligns with the customer experience. And I'm recording in San Diego, California, beautiful San Diego, at Jaguar San Diego. So listeners, let's welcome the guest for today's episode to the show. Today's guest went from running a coffee truck to operating a high-end luxury dealership. Same thing, right? Over the last 20 years, he has developed and redeveloped his skills in leadership, relationship building, negotiation, business planning, sales, and retail. In his current role as Center Operator Manager, aka General Manager, he has scaled the ranks of Jaguar dealerships, going from a top 30 store to a top 12. He's a graduate of Universidad Católica de Valparaíso. Wow, I butchered that up. Chile. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Marcelo Sandoval. Marcelo, I apologize for butchering your college, but welcome to the show.
That's completely okay, Dennis. How are you? Thanks. Great to be here.
Yeah, great. Thank you for having me. You know, first off, much respect to you, sir. You know, we've wrapped out a couple times already, and there's just an unbelievable amount of humbleness and gratitude that you reverberate. And it's especially nice for you to welcome me into your humble abode, and now you get to wrap out on my show, and we get to talk about you and how your operation is doing and what the future is going to be looking like with your operation. So, Marcel, I thought one of the first things we can actually talk about was how you started running a coffee truck to how you got into the car business, because I think that's always an interesting transition there. So, can you tell me what was going on? How did you get to work in a coffee truck, and then how'd you get into the car business?
Sure, I had arrived to California in 1995, and I was coming from Costa Rica, where I learned a lot about coffee.
Pura vida.
Pura vida, my. Exactly. And I found a gig running an old van that it was transformed into a gourmet coffee mobile kind of transport that would develop or would sell gourmet coffees to different dealerships in Orange County specifically. I would drive from Irvine to Tustin Auto Center to the Santa Ana Auto Center. Anyway, I was selling their cappuccinos, their lattes, and some smoothies, and young back then. And somebody ultimately said, hey, you should be selling cars instead of coffee. And I gave it a shot, and here I am.
Well, okay, so take me back here. Born and raised in Chile.
Yes.
And Chile is a culture that is pretty male-dominated, right? Or it's
very much so. Chauvinistic, yeah. Very, very Catholic, very conservative. I'm a son of a single woman, single mother with very little education. So I learned quite a few things from her, from domestic things at home, and appreciated deeply what women have to go through to develop in a hostile environment. And I think that helped a lot. I mean, I'm a pretty decent cook, and I know how to clean and wash and do things like that. My wife is pleased with that. So, yeah, I think it's got something to do with bringing in Chile.
Well, so then now as you are at the position that you're in now, what are some of the, what are some of your guiding principles or values that you've either learned along the way or that have just come natural to you from a leadership standpoint? Again, it seems as if that, you have probably more of the whole street smarts of how you've gotten to master your ability. So what are some of the things that were of pretty big focus to you that you're able to now get to where you are now?
It's a very good question. I'm going to try to simplify or make it brief. I think it's the attitude you take things in life. I think that attitude comes first from being grateful. I think gratitude and attitude match very well. They even rhyme. When you're grateful of the things you have, your attitude is positive. And when you have good friends, when you have good relationships, and when you have honesty to yourself, the rest is it just happens. There is a song I really like from Lennon who wrote to his son Sean, and he says, "Life is what happens to you while you're busy making other plans." And that's what happened to me. I was making other plans, and then life happened, and here I am. But as an advice, it would be maybe be grateful for what you have, and be honest to yourself. And sales and service happen as a byproduct from building consistent relationships to your values, and that's my motto. Building straightforward relationships with people, caring.
Do you have any favorite authors, role models, people that you follow, or books that you've read that you would recommend?
Well, I'm a bit corny on the end. I like poetry. Pablo Neruda is my favorite poet, and I find a lot of romanticism and explanation of things in my mind and in my heart through his poetry. And I like Latin American authors like Gabriel Garcia Marquez and many others. So I have an array of favorites. But
is that more for entertainment, or is there actually just is there like are they imparting wisdom to you?
I think I find in many of their characters, I find characteristics that I like and I follow through there. I find leadership. I find resilience in some of those characters and magical realism. It's a little unorthodox, really. You probably were waiting for me to say, another author like Zig Ziglar or something like
Not necessarily. Not really. I mean, I think this is part of the uniqueness of you. And then I guess listeners, Marcelo and I were talking off air, and he had asked me, how did I come across Jaguar San Diego? And my response was, as I was perusing around different dealership websites, one of the things I always check out, because I'm not looking for a car, I'm not looking at the inventory, I'm looking at all the other pages of a website. And one of the pages that came across that resonated with me for Jaguar San Diego was their staff page, and the fact that the profile pictures are not your typical corporate pictures. They're still professional, but there's a lot of character in the staff that they're conveying through their own image there. And then what's now been announced to me from Marcelo is his title was Center Operator Manager, which again, I thought that was kind of a unique stamp on this store. I was gladly awoken to the idea that this was more from Jaguar Corporate and them instituting that title, which, okay, cool. But I guess, you know, Marcelo, let's talk about your staff here then, because you do have you have granted the blessing of saying, hey, staff, give me a professional picture, but show some character. And, you know, it's kind of unusual to a certain extent for a high-end luxury store, would you say?
Well, Dennis, yeah, you have to be different. I mean, consumers are looking for people to trust. They're trying to find guidance. There is a lot of miscommunication out there. There is a lot of confusion. And, you know, we forget to be humans. And my staff like the idea of showing their real personal lives through their photographs. And I've been getting quite a few compliments on the fact that, yeah, indeed, that's what they project. They're honest. They're people like anybody else, and they have pictures with their families, and I had people skydiving. I had people with their pets, their girlfriend, boyfriends, husband, wives, etc. And that makes us more approachable, which is the main goal. And titles, I'm not really hung up on titles, really. But if the difference in between a GM and a center operator catches somebody's attention, so be it. I'll embrace it.
Yeah, right. Well, let's kind of start getting into how the operation is here at Jaguar San Diego. So, you know, one of the things you had mentioned is that you have adopted FAIR.
Fair.com, yes.
Share with me how that relationship has been going. What's just the history of it and where you see that fitting in with your business?
Yeah, Fair.com, it arrived to our store probably 3-4 months ago. And it really intrigued me, the concept of leasing pre-owned vehicles for a term that it would be mainly decided by the consumer. So I thought it was, you know, a good idea to jump in as a pilot store. And yeah, we've sold few of those cars, and the experience is great. You know, mainly the younger crowd who wants to lease a good, you know, a high-end vehicle for a modest price and without many strings attached. It takes all that researching away from the table, and they utilize their technology, which is great, and it's simple. It's just simple. It's easy. It's easy as to buying a piece of clothing, but you know.
Is this what you see the future of your dealership?
No, I mean, it's in part. Many more technologies are going to be offered, and I can see that the car business is soon to reach this tipping point with so many different offerings and approaches. We were talking earlier about autonomous driving, for example, is in the horizon, and many other different concepts. We are reinventing ourselves. We are in this constant evolution on how to do business. But I would say the core of the car business, the experience, the negotiating piece that is so sought out by many, it will remain. So it'll be a combination of things.
Are there any technologies that you wish were available to you at your store to help out the customer experience? Let's say if you were the engineer / venture capitalist all in one, and you had the ability to implement some mind-blowing solution for your dealership, do you have an idea of one?
Well, you know, when you order a pizza and you just pick your toppings and you place your order, and then, you know, in within an hour you get it delivered. Sort of that simplicity, that technology
so custom,
is what it needs.
Like custom order, I mean.
Yeah.
But now we're including another beast in the equation, that being the automaker.
Right.
Which maybe this is a good pivot point in talking about automakers. So, you know, Marcel, you carry a particular conviction about the relationship between automakers and dealerships. And certainly for listeners who may not know a whole lot of this relationship, it's you can describe it as love-hate, or I certainly will, love-hate. And certainly over the last few years, it's probably been more on the hate end just because the automakers and the dealers aren't exactly aligning in what their objectives are as a business. But Marcel, you have some other thoughts about this. Can you share with me what you think?
Yeah, I think that one of the damaging points in this relationship that you're describing is the fight or the struggle for control. And I see that many brands are fighting and factories are really achieving this control of new inventory, new cars sales mainly, and now they're more involved with used cars as well. So as a retailer, we only have a few pieces to control now. The F&I end is one of them, the fixed operations, and not even used cars is really one of them much longer, because factories are you know, shoving down our throats a certain amount of service loaners that need to be enrolled on a monthly basis, and then they're telling us how many miles we can put or we cannot put on those cars before we put them in the front line as pre-owned and CPO. So it's unfortunately taking a lot of control from the retailer. And one of the elements as a byproduct is the shrinking of profits, which is also changing the culture in at the dealerships, because a lot of the good quality sales representatives you normally used to have, they're not here any longer. They're moving on, and it's changing.
Are they moving to other stores? Or are they getting out of the business?
Both. I think they're still looking for those profitable options, but they're slimming out. I mean, I'm coming from a BMW experience, for example, of several years with the brand, and we used to forecast to a profit PVR on every unit. I would say an average in between $1,500 to $2,000 a copy, and right now stores are forecasting to lose the same amount, $1,500 to $2,000 a copy, and that's the new norm, and it's unfortunate because you know, man, it's a battle for market share at the OEM level, and the casualties are the retailers and their employees.
Do you see? Would you forecast that a lot of franchise dealerships may run into the model that Carvana has employed?
I don't know. It's hard to tell. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. I think that some of them are trying it. I think they're going to be successful with it. But again, we always go back. It's so cyclical. It's like history. It repeats itself. It's going to keep on going in circles. And I think until the proper leadership, it's on those OEMs, people that understand the retail world, are placed on those leadership roles, we will continue having this relationship struggle.
Is there any one particular element of the relationship that, I mean, let me put you in the position. If you were spearheading it, what would be some of the improvements you would make between automakers and dealers?
Well, first of all, I would stop the smoke and mirrors and trying to register so many units that are really not there just to please stockholders in New York. That is a bad habit. And again, this is, in my opinion, is it's not a straightforwardness, and it's not honest. It's not honest. So that's one of the things. And that's, I think, is fueled by greed. And we are in a business where we're for profit, but we're cannibalizing ourselves.
Well, it, again, refreshing to hear some of this, right? Because on one hand, the automakers, they will, you know, of course, they'll say, hey, we're for the customer. Dealers, hey, we're for the customer. But dealers are really, this is where the rubber meets the road. You are at the customer facing mm-hmm. end of things. Mm-hmm. And so certainly, you know, I know that with, let's say, BMW, that there were the cases, I don't know if it's still practiced now, but, you know, recently where, sure, in order to still become the, or stay as the number one manufacturer, there was all these different rules that the automakers were applying to the dealerships so that they couldn't turn, you know, so they could turn a new car into a used car and count it as a unit, so forth and so on. Like that is damaging to the customer experience, mm-hmm. and I think this is one of those things that I don't think a lot of customers realize is the undue pressures of trying to keep employees happy, so your employees take care of the customers, but yet you have like this beast in the room that's constantly coughing down you and saying, hey, okay, you're tracking 300 cars this quarter, you need to be at 500, and you have 2 weeks to do it, so. Mm-hmm. Get on it.
Yeah, you're spot on that. And that damages the customer experience. Customers get confused. They don't know what they're buying.
Right.
You know, a freshly new CPO, service loaner, RDR, punch car, whatever you call them. I mean, you know, warranties begin earlier and they don't understand why they have to pay for that. And it's confusing. I would say let's just go back to the simple, straightforward business.
Well, so then where do you see companies then like FAIR coming into the equation, or how does FAIR help out with this stuff?
FAIR is just it's a platform designed for pre-owned. It's a leasing option with no specific terms. It just gives flexibility to the driver, to the owner, and. It makes it so much more easier for them to just choose a payment, choose a car, go pick up the vehicle, and so be it. There is no paperwork in between and nothing else. But I don't think it affects much the new car and that we were talking about. It's more oriented towards the used car experience. But slowly and surely, I think new technologies and platforms similar like that will carry on. But we're still in control of the OEMs.
You know, with regards to the demographics of Jaguar buyers, or just the demographics of Jaguar San Diego, are you seeing a lot of the millennials come in here now, or would you say they're 50%? Are they 80% of your business?
Not quite. But on the way to it, I think the for Jaguar in particular. The perception of the brand, it's more towards an age bracket that is north of the 40s and up. But there has been refreshments in the models. We have the electrification of the brand now just happening with the new I-Pace being released, a fully electric luxury sedan that it's appealing, it's giving competition and something to talk about to those Tesla mm-hmm. owners. So that's rejuvenizing a bit the experience or the platform for Jaguar owners. But we're not quite there yet. I mean, we're working on it. We're working on it. And I've seen the new models that Jaguar is coming out and Land Rover as well. And it's very exciting. The future is exciting when it comes down to that.
Certainly. I mean, you know, given the fact that there's always going to be, or there's been a strong interest in a lot of the German luxury vehicles, some of the manufacturers that have kind of been always dancing on the outside, hoping to break in. Jaguar is one of them. Volvo is another one. But Jaguar has been coming up with a lot of different vehicle models that are more appealing. The I-Pace, as you had mentioned, will start to bring about the discussion for people interested in electric vehicles. There's the F-Pace. I think the F-Pace is a gorgeous car. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the... what's the sport car?
Oh, you're talking about the F-Type.
F-Type, Jesus, I don't know why I forgot the name of that one. The F-Type, yeah, that F-Type is just purely amazing, especially the sound of it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in terms of this long road you're having to fight, let's say not even with the automakers now, but, you know, with the brand struggles of Jaguar, you know, what's your recipe for success here?
Nah, I don't know if my recipe will be equal to success at the end of the day, but it will make me sleep better at night knowing that I'm being true to myself. And again, going back to what I do with my team here is reinforcing a culture where a most important piece of the element is the relationship making, an honest relationship making aligned with all our values, with our clients. I'm not in the business. This is going to sound a little weird, but I'm not in the business to satisfy customers or to make customers or clients. I'm more in the business to create fans. And fans give you their heart. Fans don't ask for too many discounts. Fans will help you sell more cars. And in order to do that, you need to employ and develop employees that are fun makers. And people need to be different. So I applaud the individual characters in people. I empower them, and I tell them, please take care of the customers. I mean, treat them like if they were your mom.
So one of the questions I always like to ask then, especially if what you advocate here are to create fans, which is that actually is a aspirational objective to do, and certainly again different than what I hear from most other dealers. So one of the questions then I would ask then is, so if people were looking to work for you, mm-hmm. what would be the question you would ask them?
What's different about you? And I would develop from there. And I would I have a term I've been I keep on repeating with my teams, and I look for purple cows.
Purple cows.
Purple cows. That's what I look for. So I'll you want to play a game with me real quick?
Okay.
All right. So imagine you're driving your favorite convertible down a road. Imagine it's a California beautiful day, no clouds in the sky. You have green rolling hills on each side of the road. There is no rush. It's you and nobody else on the road. And for miles, you see cows grazing on each side of the road.
I'm seeing fat. I'm seeing non-organic cows driving. Okay.
And then all of a sudden, you see a purple cow right on the side of the road. What do you do?
Well, I'm Asian, so I would probably pull over and take pictures.
Exactly. What do you do with the pictures?
Oh, I mean, I'd turn them into memes or, you know, pass them around. But yeah, well, right. I guess, yeah, share them.
You would probably share them with your family, friends, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm looking for. The car business is just that.
You're looking for purple cows.
I'm looking for purple cows. The road is not as glamorous. I mean, the roads for the dealerships are typically freeways or this convoy where I am right now. And the cows are... the people that don't do changes, they don't do things differently. The salespeople are just waiting. 80% of their time are waiting for something to happen. Well, I'm looking for purple cows because I am one. Purple cows are the ones that people like to, that first of all, they catches their attention. They get curious about who the heck is this guy? Why is he different? And then they share with friends and family. And hence, you start building fans. That's in essence.
Kudos. I like that. I like that. You know, so part of the challenge here, though, right, is, as you said, now I can't actually remember if we talked about this off air or if this was on air, but some of the staff that, as a result of some of the undue pressures of the automakers, you're kind of losing out on some of these good staff members now, mm-hmm. or it's hard, they're harder to find, right?
Right.
So, I mean, I guess first off, where do you see the business in 10 years? And I'll even give you an example, and you don't have to go down this way. But are you seeing commission based salesmen or sales professionals? Are you seeing product experts?
I think the product expert is something that the business is leaning towards. And again, this is created by factories. BMW started with their Genius program, for example, and product specialists and many other brands. And the commissions are disappearing. The margins are are disappearing. So salary-based individuals that know their product and they can present them, just like a genius bar at an Apple store. It's sort of like the model that factories are looking forward to or looking for. And I think that that's what's going to happen at the end of the day.
And is, I mean, so then how does Marcelo look for a purple cow in the changing landscape?
Well, one of the things I like about this role is that I got the possibility to creating, and I can find solutions for those problems and still create a competitive pay plan for individuals. And we don't have to sacrifice the customer experience. There are still ways. That's a struggle. That's the daily thing. That's what keeps me up at night, is finding out how we are going to continue being purple. And another thing that I must add is being aware of where you are. And by that I mean the community. The community is really important for my success. This year we were awarded with the Business of the Year Award here in San Diego, the 6th District, and it was presented by Council Member Chris Kay. And it was something that we were not expecting. One of the things I appreciate is the community, and first responders are number one. So I celebrated them, and I brought them here to the store, and I brought all the Jaguar owners, and we celebrated their efforts and presented a small contribution. But more than anything, make people aware that there are many ways to participate and support charities like the Foundation for the Police Foundation down here, for the Fire and Rescue, for Make-A-Wish Foundation, and so on. So I've done a lot of that. I did a lot of that in Orange County as well. And as a byproduct, you sell cars, because people talk about, hey, those guys over there, not too bad. I mean, they throw cool parties, and they really care about the community, and hence we got the prize. I'm very, very honored.
Well, and this kind of goes back to the whole idea of creating fans.
Yep.
Right? Because again, you're not asking anything of them. I mean, if anything, you're doing the exact opposite. You're giving them something,
right?
And then in return, you know, they see the purple cow, they come to Jaguar Land Rover, exactly. Or Jaguar San Diego, exactly. And they're taking pictures and sharing it.
Yep, that's exactly right.
The community, you know, I the community dealer relationship is always an interesting one, right? Because in my eyes, it's always this idea that, well, because of all the local tax dollars or the tax dollars that's generated at the dealership, you want to give it back to the community. But I'm sure you get hit up all the time from a bunch of different organizations that want, I mean, frankly, the money, right? Of course, they would want the association, but they want the money more so than anything else. How are you dealing with the multiple requests for involvement?
Well, I become more than a donor. I become a connector. And I think that's the difference, because otherwise, we're not a nonprofit organization. I mean, we need to make money, and we just can't afford, giving it away. Simply, that's too easy. You need to connect people, and what I do is to make people aware of these groups of charity or institutions and their work, and by becoming this connector, you're making the community work for the community somehow. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you are the conduit, mm-hmm, for that to happen. So it doesn't have to be a check that you write, but you can create an event, you can create a walk, you can create a big potluck. I mean, you name it. It's so much to create. There is so much you can do differently other than just signing a check and give it to somebody. That's powerful, but not as powerful as the engagement that you look for within the community, and you being that person that facilitates it all.
Are there any moments in the car business where you were glad to take on this a particular organization, or you passed on an organization, but then you're like, man, I should have done it, and I could have done this with it. Any almost anecdotal points?
I try not to regret much in life, because you know, why are you gonna cry right. over spilled milk? You can only
unless
look forward.
Unless that milk is purple.
Unless, then I wouldn't probably get close to it. It's kind of anyway. Something comes to mind, though. About a month and a half ago, we were supporting the Make-A-Wish Foundation of San Diego, and there was a young man, 13, 14-year-old, named David, and with a terminal disease. And one of his dreams was to have a video game console, and also he liked sports cars. So we put this very quickly together, and we had the whole team here waiting for him for his arrival, and we took him in the F-Type, and we took him on an Aston Martin that we had at the time available to us as well for a spin around, and we celebrated him, and he was the protagonist, the main character here in the dealership. He looked at all the cool cars, and it was priceless to see that smile, and his family was in tears as well, because something so small, so simple, that all of us have, in the car business I have, you know, making a dream come true, something so humble, it made a difference. And while he was here, the team at the Make-A-Wish Foundation was putting together a console at his house, in his room, so he went home, it was really, really cool. So those are the moments that you say, see, you didn't have to write a check to make somebody happy.
So I want to peel the onion here a little more. If you were to it sounds like you're living your life as a story, as a book. So who is your character now? Describe your character now.
I think that my character right now, I can tell you the stage I'm in, is I am a father, and I've got two great kids, Fernando and Pablo, 19 and 12, and I see that I'm in a chapter in my life where I want to provide them with as many tools as possible so that they can write their own books. So first and foremost, I'm a dad, I'm a husband, and I want them proud, and I want to take care of them and give them, again, the tools that they need. So I'm on a stage in the book where I'm accomplishing things for them. I'm showing them the way. I'm showing them that dreams can come true at the end of the day, and no matter where you are, no matter who you are, if you set a goal and you look for the relationship that will help you achieve it, you might end up there. I always say you need to aim at the stars. You might not end up with one, but you're not going to end up with a handful of mud either.
Look at you. You're filled with a bunch of allegories. And but no, it is interesting, Marcelo, because in asking you just about your life philosophies, your career trajectory, the things that you're interested in, I mean, they're all, as an outsider, I don't know if anyone's ever voiced this to you, but as an outsider, it seems all interwoven into some kind of book. And it seems like right now, this is a particular chapter of your book. And yeah, if you're describing it to be as such, it would stay consistent with previous chapters as we've kind of outlined. So it's, and I think as a bigger takeaway from all this too is I think that then just speaks then to how that plays out with your employees, how it plays out with the customers. I mean, certainly in coming here again, it felt felt like home. It was very lax, of course, clean. That's one of my big things. I always got to make sure like I'm going to a place, okay, everything is clean around here, right? But you can feel and you sense that, and again, I don't know. I'm sure there was part of you that was like, okay, I want to make sure that yes, when people come here, it feels like home. But it's probably working in exponential levels that you probably don't realize. And I'm here to tell you that I'm feeling all of it. And again, it's probably because I also get to sit down and talk with the, you know, with the big cheese.
Well, good. Thank you. I appreciate that. Actually, that means a lot.
I mean, certainly the facility of a dealership is not going away, right? Like you wouldn't see. Would you hypothesize that in some kind of hypothetical way the automaker gets closer to the customer, kind of like Tesla, where a dealer, you know, an automaker obfuscates the dealer and is going directly to the consumer? Or probably won't happen.
No, I don't think that's close yet. I mean, Tesla is a great example. It could happen. It's a bit concerning. And when the time arrives, and if that happens, then new solutions will occur. But, you know, it's like money. Money's always there. It's just the pockets that change. I think that the automobile industry will carry on with this pursuit of providing individual transportation, but at the same time being profitable. I mean, you can't just eliminate this beast, survive for over 100 years, and I think that we're going to have it for a little longer. The technology will be different, and the way we develop and we deliver service is different. It's more fluid, I would say, simpler. But no, we're still far from it. I think that within my career time left, I will still have the good old dealership.
Will your sons experience a dealership?
I hope so. I hope so. I really do.
That's good. Tell me this. Anything exciting coming up for this particular month in December?
Well, the iPACE has been finally released, and that's the most exciting piece of the Jaguar brand. It's really exciting. It's a phenomenal automobile, a luxury at its peak, and with great range, and it's very, very exciting car. And overall, by 2025, Jaguar Land Rover promised to electrify their brand completely. So at some level, each one of their models will have some sort of electrification. I'm very excited about the XJ that is going to be coming up, which is the flagship for Jaguar. And I don't know if I'm going to get in trouble, but I'm going to release the fact that it's going to be a fully electric vehicle. And I saw it in Portugal this year at a sneak peek preview, and it's outstanding. It's amazing.
That thing is just a beautiful kind of yacht. Yes. I mean, I've always loved the extended full size sedans, but you know, Jaguar has lines on it that definitely mirror kind of more of that yacht style. Like just, you know, very, a lot of the lines are curved.
The art of performance.
I like it. Well, Marcel, how can people get in touch with you?
They can just visit our website at www.jaguasandiego.com. They can call me directly here to 858-362-6001.
And where's that accent from again?
I'm from Chile, but the accent, well, yeah, it's a hybrid. Yeah. It's a hybrid. Yeah, I got teachers that taught me English, or they tried to at least, and they were from Great Britain, and so I guess that's stuck.
I really hope you were able to obtain some valuable insight into the contentious relationship between automakers and dealers. Not everyone is willing to speak truth to power, and Marcelo Sandoval did it so eloquently and pragmatically. So thanks to Marcelo for sharing his thoughts and insight. Listeners, stay tuned for next week's episode, where we get to hear about Kelly's car buying journey.
That's right. December is a big month for car deals to happen, and serving as co-host on this podcast, I've been able to learn and relearn the best methods to buy a car. And remember, I'm not from the automotive industry or car business, so I have lots to share with you about my experience. And how do we end every episode?
Cheers! Prost! L'chaim! Kipis! Nastravi! Salud! Kampai! Mabruk! Tutsins! Gambe! Yamas! To the customer experience. Yeah.